Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Outreach Radio, brought to you by the Elite Speakers Bureau. Join ESB owners and your hosts, Denise Brown and Danielle Pierre, as they discuss and interview their expert speakers regarding topics such as violence prevention, school safety, suicide prevention, addiction and recovery, mental health and wellness, leadership, and more. Denise and Danielle also interview event hosts about their upcoming events, so tune in weekly to ask questions, find solutions, or get event information. All showtimes to be announced. And now, here's your hosts, Denise and Danielle.
Hi there, and welcome to Outreach Radio. It is just me, Denise, today. Danielle is out for the week. But she will be returning with us next time or on our next show. So instead of having a conversation like the two of us usually do, what I'm going to do is I am going to introduce our guest this afternoon. Our guest is Stephanie Angelo. Stephanie has set a new standard for working with business leaders who are often not aware of the deep costs their company experiences as a result of social issues. The rewarding outcome is workplace violences are safe, supportive, and sought after. Stephanie is a multi-award-winning expert and ensures clients receive practical ideas and skills which immediately inspire them, increase their ability to address this workplace issue, and ensure state and federal compliance. The result is clients report decreased turnover, reduction in workplace incidents, noticeable changes in the affected individuals, and positive changes in corporate culture. So this afternoon, welcome to the show, Stephanie Angelo. Stephanie, hi, how are you?
Hi, Denise, long time no talk. It's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. And you know that this is a topic that is near and dear to my heart, domestic violence, any form of domestic violence. And I just want you to tell our listeners today, how is it that you became so passionate about domestic violence?
Well, yeah, you know, our listeners don't know that you and I met many, many years ago when I was actually writing the book Serrated, a true crime memoir, with a person here in Phoenix, Tracy Stombrace, who was a victim of very, very egregious domestic violence and barely survived. And she was re-victimized not only in the criminal courts, but later on in the civil courts. And so I remember many, many years ago, probably 12 years ago or so, when you and I talked for the first time, we had a lot of that in common. And your question to me about how I got involved is, you know, it's something that people are very curious about, and I get that question a lot. And I grew up around domestic violence. It was in the home when I was a child. My father was emotionally very, very manipulative and abusive in that sense. And my parents divorced when I was 8. And then my mother had a live-in boyfriend from the time I was 10 till I was 17. So pretty much the most informative years of a kid's life.
Right.
And this person was physically abusive with her and my brother and myself. And so I had that. And then there was a degree of it in my first marriage, which was when I was in my very early 20s. I'm now remarried and have been for 22 years, and this marriage is very different. And about
Stephanie, hold on one second. Because a lot of people, they think, okay, well, it comes to domestic violence, it's mom and dad, and, you know, you, on the other hand, have had now a boyfriend, your mother's boyfriend, or your stepfather.
Yeah.
Did she ever marry that man? Did she marry them or not?
Thankfully,
he was in and out of the house.
Yeah,
You know, a lot of people don't believe that it can happen to them in that kind of a situation, especially the women that are in those kind of relationships. They tend to. I don't know if this is your case, but you know, I've heard so many stories that it's the boyfriend that, you know, beats the child because it's not their child, or manipulates that child into having sex with them, or, you know, a multitude of things, which is just so scary for me. And, you know, a lot of times, I don't know if this is your situation, but they tend to believe that boyfriend. Now, why do you have any idea? I mean, I hope to pray to God that that's not something that happened to you, but do you have any idea what that mentality is and why these mothers tend to believe their boyfriends over their children?
You know, that is really interesting, because what happened,
question, right?
I think, in my childhood and looking back at my mother, it was classic, a textbook case of somebody being kind of duped by somebody who was charming and fell in love with them so quickly, and that's really attractive. And here you are raising two kids, so you think another set of hands would really be helpful,
right.
And somebody else in the home would be helpful. And you know, it was interesting as a child to observe the way my mother was mesmerized by this individual. And you know what, Denise, it was really interesting too. After my mother passed away, not due to the domestic violence, but my mother passed away from other causes years ago, and to go back and read her journals, and Denise, to read my mother's version of what was going on back then and compare it to my own childhood memory was really amazing.
Was it different?
It was different to what you remember as a child? Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because a lot of things were going on with that boyfriend that I was afraid to tell her, because I was afraid of exactly what you said, that she would believe him over me. So there were things that I never told her. And the times that she would kick him out, my brother and I were so relieved, because we even talked about how we could become emancipated minors. We would have long walks. I grew up in a snowy climate, and I remember walking through the snow late at night at 10 and 12 years of age, my brother and I, and just talking about ways we could become emancipated and to get out of the house. And we really had like no options. And I remember feeling so defeated when we would walk back home and be right back in the thick of it again. And so she would kick him out from time to time, and we would be like, singing hallelujah, you know, this guy is gone. And I just remember so painfully what it was like when he would come back again, you know, 2 months later, 4 months later. And it was like, really, Mom, you finally got him out and now you let him back. And that went on for 7 years, you know. That had a huge impact on us.
Mm-hmm. So how did you as a child going through your teenage years, and now all of a sudden as an adult having your own family, how did you get through that? Was it did you end up going to a shelter? Did you do therapy? Did you seek therapy? What did you do to get through this and come to the point where you are today? Because you're an amazing advocate for domestic violence.
Thank you. You know, it really was therapy. I mean, I remember going through one bad relationship after the next over and over and over. And I really did my dating between my first marriage and my second marriage, because there was a 9-year break. That's when I finally did the dating I probably should have done as a teenager or in college, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those boyfriends who actually had said to me, you know, when your body is sick, you go to a doctor. So if your mind and your heart are sick, why not go to a doctor? It's okay to get therapy. There's no shame in it. There's no embarrassment in it. And that was the best message I could have possibly heard. And so I found a really, really wonderful woman to start talking to. And it made all of the difference. And I am absolutely convinced that that is what led me to being able to have the healthy relationship with my husband that I, like I said, will be married 22 years next month.
Wow, that's so wonderful.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a lot of teenagers nowadays, you know, they're going through the same thing that you did. So to let them know and to tell them and to talk about, hey, there is no shame in seeking help. There is no shame in seeking out a therapist. They just have to be good therapists. They have to understand the issue that you're going through, not just somebody that's going to blame your mom or dad. You know, it's like it's their issue.
I
their
agree.
Problem. Yeah. So
I mean, we both had teenagers, and
they're so vulnerable.
Yeah,
they're so impressionable at that age. And for you to be able to seek out the right kind of help right at the get-go and to be able to, you know, see that light at the end of the tunnel, have a wonderful marriage, and now to continue your advocacy about helping others, I mean, that is really, that's like, you know, a 360-degree turnaround of what your life was to what your life is now. So
yeah.
Having said that, I mean, which is wonderful, what kind of venues do you, I'm sure you talk to teenagers, you talk to women and, you know, adults, you talk to corporations, and this is something where I'm like, wow, you know, the corporations, do they get it? Stephanie, do they understand
what's going on?
You know,
some really do and some really don't. It's sort of the mentality of who's ever at the helm, because the rest of the folks will take the lead from that individual. So if you have a CEO or whatever the top executive is that really buys into it, that really believes in doing something for the workplace, almost as an extension of their own family, then the rest of the workplace will follow suit. You also have those employers that look at it from the bottom line perspective, you know, what it's really potentially going to cost them. And so there are those two different camps, and I sometimes wish I had a crystal ball. Well, I actually do have a crystal ball, but it's not a working crystal ball. But I do have this big glass ball that my husband bought me, and it's in my, you know, in my office. But if it was a working crystal ball, it would be able to tell me this CEO is going to be more attuned to the bottom line results, or this CEO really cares more about their employees.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Have to sort of it would be nice if we knew ahead of time, but it takes that conversation, and it takes listening to what's going on with them and what their fears and concerns are to really be able to answer them in such a way that resonates with that individual person. You know, what's really worrying them? What's keeping them up at night? How do they feel about their employees? What is troubling them and worrying them? Because I have the answers to those questions. I need to be able to find out from him or her what it is.
What it is that they actually need. Now, do you, when you go in and you speak to these people, how is it, okay, I know that there are certain people that, do they put it on their applications that, you know, if anything like this is going on, if you're in a volatile situation or, you know, in a domestic situation, do they put that on an application or do you go to HR? What do you do as an employee if you've got something like this going on? Because I think a lot of people are afraid to go to HR or are afraid because they don't know what the policies are. Is there some place where they can find that out?
Yeah, that's a multifaceted question and a really, really good one, Denise. One of the things that was an impetus for me getting involved in the way that I did with the workplace is when I saw somebody re-victimized by a human resources colleague, and I was horrified at the whole event, and what I saw and the way that this woman treated the other woman was just so egregious to me, because HR of all entities should be the last that treats somebody as horribly as I saw this one person who was an HR colleague treat an employee of mine. So one of the things that I love the most about the trainings that I do is the trainings have so many facets to them, but one of my favorite ones is the skill practices, where we take all of the taboos and the fears out of having a conversation by actually teaching people how to have effective dialogues, what is best to be said and what is best not to be said, why you have these certain kinds of conversations. And we really take the fear out of it by practicing things and having dialogues. And it's a lot of fun because we actually – you know, we can ham it up without poking fun of domestic violence or workplace violence. We can still ham it up by seeing our coworkers be actors. So it's a lot of fun. But the meat of it really is the policy and procedures. And if the company doesn't have one, that's one of the things I love the most, is to write their workplace violence policy. And as an offshoot of that, to write a domestic violence policy, because the two are really not the same. And so many organizations will have a
well. You write them
I absolutely do.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and it's so important to have it written for your organization, because what your organization needs and the language and the content is not the same as your neighbor across the street. It's
right.
just not.
And
so we have to have different... Yeah, it is. And it has different elements to it. And so we really customize the policies and procedures. And that itself becomes a part of the training, too, because managers have to be trained on the policies because they have to apply it. And employees are trained on the policy because that's what they adhere to, for lack of a better word, as an employee. But they need to know what their company has in place for them. And it's,
okay, how do they find out
wonderful.
If it is in place? How do they find out if it is in place?
Well, that's one reason why I'm a huge proponent for mandatory training, because if you make it voluntary training and you're hoping that people that are victims are going to come forward, they're not, because they just feel like they have a neon sign on their forehead. So you make it mandatory training. That way everybody hears the same message, and the people that may be offenders or may be victims are mixed into the group anyhow. And so they're hearing it just by osmosis. Right, because they're all in the same group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And
go ahead.
Well, one of the things that I love so much about it is not only does everybody hear the same message, but what's really wonderful about it is afterwards, the people that will privately seek me out and call me for additional information, or they'll send emails to me, or that will go to their own HR people because they know that the HR representatives have been specially trained, or they know who the go-to people are in management that have had special training. Because not necessarily everybody in the workplace will. Hopefully they will, but if not, you will at least have certain go-to people that have had training. And it's important to me that those go-to people are trained before you do the employee training, because you're going to get a spike in people coming forward. Yeah,
right.
And that's what you want. You want people who come forward now that you've taken part in this training. It's just like harassment training, which in your state of California is mandated. You're going to get a spike in people coming forward after you've had the training. But that spike is exactly what you want. A, because now you get people that will get the help and the resources they need. And B, because you have management that has been trained to receive those people that are now going to come forward and self-disclose.
Okay, so Stephanie, you're telling me that here in California we have mandatory harassment training. What about in different states, Nevada, Arizona? Are all the laws different when it comes to domestic violence in corporations?
You know, they vary from state to state. So, like in your state of California, harassment training is mandatory. In Arizona, yeah. And I don't want to quote too much on the laws there in California, but
no,
you know, the
I
laws do vary
that.
From state. Yeah.
Right.
But it's always amusing for us in Arizona because we're also in the Ninth Circuit. So we always kind of joke that, well, what California has is going to be here before long. But having said that, there are certain state and federal laws that are mandated. So, for example, in Arizona, we have the Arizona Workplace Law, where if you have been a victim of violence, you can take time away from work so that you can seek out legal help, you can do depositions, you can file orders of protection, that kind of thing. But in other states, it's not for filings of paper, it's to seek medical care. So the victim's leave law differs from state to state.
Okay, so
and there
does,
are other laws
somebody,
that...
Yeah, how does somebody, when they're in a situation like this, okay, you have a victim of domestic violence, she is going to work, she has a restraining order against her partner, and she goes to work, and all of a sudden he comes and he's bashing down the door and he's harassing her. Are there laws in place that this victim cannot get fired because of something that is going on in her private life, or are they still getting fired for things that are going on in their private lives? Because I remember that from years ago as well.
Yeah, you know, a couple of years ago I was interviewed by the Indy Star newspaper because Pitney Bowes had actually done that to an employee. She countersued for wrongful termination, and she won. And unfortunately, some employers still have this knee-jerk reaction where they will fire an employee, and it's a huge mistake because you can be sued for wrongful termination. You can be sued for discrimination because it's predominantly a woman. You know, that's a victim.
Right.
So
right.
Predominantly it's a woman who's being fired. And so the wonderful thing about the work that I've been able to do with employers is to take that fear out of it, where you don't have to have these knee-jerk reactions. We have so many other resolutions we can come to where you can save a valuable employee and keep her safe and keep your employees safe.
Right.
And even though that there are federal laws, for example, OSHA, even under the OSHA general guidelines, which say that an employer must provide a workplace that is safe and free of known hazards and even unknown hazards. So sometimes an employer is so worried about, well, you know, there's potential violence, so I've got to get rid of any potential reason for violence coming to the workplace, so I better get rid of this employee. That's such a closed thinking, and like I said, a knee-jerk reaction. So they're cutting off their nose to spite their face. So in following one law, they're violating it with another. You know, none of that has to happen.
Wow, how confusing that gets. It doesn't have to happen. And, you know, I always say be proactive instead of reactive. I think the more you know and the more you're educated about the issue of domestic violence, you know, the power and control, if people would just understand power and control, one human being over another. And, you know, I mean, that goes to all aspects. That goes to verbal, emotional, psychological, the physical, the financial, the sexual. I mean, there's so many different facets of that power and control of one human being over another. I mean, let your imagination go. And that is what domestic violence is.
That's one of the reasons I have a workshop that's called 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover and Other Myths About Domestic Violence, where I really go through five different areas, psychological, financial, emotional, social. You know, I go through these areas and discuss them pretty in depth to help employers, even counselors and therapists, understand more deeply the barriers to people leaving, because we're so easily going to say, well, why doesn't she just leave? But it's so complex.
Exactly.
It's so complex, and we're just not really giving it the credit that it needs to have. You know, it's like I said earlier when you asked me how I got so involved, and I said that boyfriend said to me, well, if your body is sick, you see a doctor. Well, how about if your mind is sick? It's the same kind of thing in terms of going to a counselor. When you're an employer, there is no shame in seeking help from a subject matter expert. Because as an employer, you cannot do it all. You know?
Right.
You can't train on everything under the sun and do it well. So why not seek out help from people that do it on a regular basis and really understand the issue? There's no harm in that.
No,
you know?
Absolutely not. Yes, be proactive. And, you know, you were talking about the financial. Let's just touch a little bit on the financial, because I think that I truly believe that young girls, they need to become independent. They need to have a self-worth. They need to have their own money. They need to work. I mean, this is my belief. Do not let anybody control you financially and say, oh, baby, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to take you out of this mess. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Because there's always a price to pay. Do you believe that?
Oh, I am so with you on that. You know, and if you're dating somebody and you're going to get married or whatever, and you say, look, I'm going to keep one of my own accounts that's going to be in my name only, if they have an issue with that, that ought to be a big red flag for you right there. You know, it's
exactly.
So amazing. I once got a phone call from a woman who'd been married to the same man for 36 years, and to the day she called me, she still didn't know where his paycheck went. No idea. And she told me every single week he would give her $100. And on Saturday night, she better give him all of the receipts and all of the change. If it didn't total $100, she paid the price, this woman. And Sunday he would give her allowance again. And the same routine, 36 years, she still didn't have any of her own money. And this woman had no way of getting out. And, you know, she said to me, for all intents and purposes, my life is relatively free. I can see my friends, I can do it, but I can't have a job, I can't have any of my own money, and I'm stuck to this $100 every single week. So how is this woman possibly going to get out when she had no resources of her own whatsoever? So he was controlling her financially, and that's exactly to your point of what you were saying.
I think that teenagers, they need to have their independence. And you know what? Living under your parents' roof, at majority of the time, is not the worst place to be to get an education, to get a job, to become financially secure, you know, as a teenager. I mean, if you have a horrible livelihood or a horrible, you know, teenage years, yeah, a lot of them want to be, emancipated, right? Yeah, I think that's the word. They want to be emancipated. They want to get out. They want to have their own families. But, you know, if you can stay with your parents, you may not like the rules, because a lot of teenagers nowadays don't like the rules of mom and dad, but you are living under their roof. Take advantage of it if you have a good, loving home. And, you know, become that independent person. Have that self-worth. And I truly think that, you know, there, in that respect, you know, that cycle of violence can be broken. And, you know, you come from a loving home, you are a loving person, you're going to bring up a loving child. For the unfortunate ones that are brought up in bad households, you need to be able to be strong enough to break that cycle of violence. And, you know, Stephanie, this is something that we could talk about forever and a day. You know, I mean, we could continue talking about
it. We really could.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have the time to continue talking about this anymore. But we'll definitely get you back on the show, because this is something that's so near and dear to my heart that, you know, I just want to be able to save one person's life, and I feel like if I've done that, I have done my job. You know, and I believe you feel the same way. It really does, and so we just need to continue and keep working towards that, you know, being education, awareness, being proactive, and not be reactive, because there's just so much sadness that happens when it's a reactive way of doing things with domestic violence. You know, people can lose their lives, and that's a reality.
That's the way of thinking we do really want to change, is to not be reactionary and be proactive. And it has absolutely been an honor for me to have this conversation with you, Denise. I thank you for every second that we've had this conversation.
Well, and I just want people to know that, you know, if you want Stephanie to come and speak at your event, at your corporation, you can reach her through the Elite Speakers Bureau. And, you know, we can make your event the best it can possibly be. And, you know, I mean, Stephanie, you customize things for people, like you were talking about, programs, policies, which is amazing. So, you know, continued success, and we'll get you out there speaking, and we'll get you out there to these corporations that really need your help and your expertise. So thanks again, and have a wonderful day. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and join us next time. Stephanie, talk to you soon.
Thank you, Denise.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Please join us again next Tuesday night for another great show. For more information about upcoming shows, visit us at www.outreachradioshow.com.